Hi there, it's Jillian, and I want to tell you about Jillian on Love Plus, your way to get even more Jillian on Love each week by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or Patreon. You can access exclusive bonus episodes with extras including answers to your most burning questions, advice on all things dating and relationships, and much more. Check out the link in the episode description for more information. Hi there, this is Jillian on Love, and I'm on a mission to teach people how to transform their romantic relationships by transforming the relationship they have with themselves. So whether you are in a relationship, you're single, or you're heartbroken, I've got you covered. I'm Jillian Turecki, certified relationship coach and teacher with over 20 years experience helping people transform their relationships with themselves through their bodies, breaths, and minds. I have now coached and taught thousands of people to become better versions of themselves and change the way they show up for and within their love lives. In today's episode, I welcome Jeff Gunther to the podcast, and I am very excited about this. Jeff is a licensed professional counselor in Portland, Oregon, practicing since 2005. His focus includes working with both couples and individuals, but alongside therapy, Jeff dedicates, and you might know this, his spare time creating short videos for TikTok and Instagram. TikTok, he's got close to 3 million followers. Instagram, close to 1 million. And he hosts his weekly podcast, Big Dating Energy. And you can also pre-order his new book, also titled Big Dating Energy. I mean, he's just so fantastic. We've become friends offline, and I was on his podcast recently, and I just was such a delight to interview him. And we get into all sorts of topics, dating, what we think has gone wrong with the apps, what's going on from the male perspective when they're looking at provocative accounts, how to kind of address that, and the difference between red flag chemistry and green flag chemistry. And you know, we get a little personal and talk about a few of his wildly popular videos. And the thing about him, he's kind of like therapist, but also comedian. It's really cool. So I do think that you are going to very much enjoy this. And so here we go. Hi, Jeff. Welcome.
Hello. I'm so happy to be here.
I am so happy to see you again because I was just on your podcast and I think we had a really great conversation. So I'm excited to continue.
Yeah, me too. That was one of my favorite conversations so far. So I appreciate you coming on.
I'm honored. I'm honored. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to dive right into it. This is something that I've actually wanted to ask you for so long, just what your thoughts were on this. And I have a feeling that you probably get a lot of people asking you this question. So it's mostly women, and it's mostly women who date men. I would say it's actually all women and all women who date men who submit this question to me, which is, how do I deal with someone who I'm dating or starting to date? And I notice that he follows some quote unquote provocative accounts on social media. How do I deal with that? I think it's a hard question to answer because, first of all, what would one consider to be provocative? So I think that we need to define what that is. And then I would just love to know your take on how one has that kind of conversation, number one. And number two, like, is it a red flag? Is it something that you can communicate about and work through it? What I'm curious what your thoughts are on this. I'm sure you've gotten this question before.
Oh, yeah. It's one of my like top asked questions ever since I started posting as Therapy Jeff. So many, and I, for some reason, avoided like making a video or answering this question for a really long time, because I think it's a little complicated and there's some layers and there isn't just one right answer. But after getting asked this question over and over and over and over, I eventually kind of came to an answer that like felt good to me. And I think resonated with a lot of people, but maybe the guys didn't quite agree with what I said. But it's funny because there's like provocative. So we can talk maybe about like what provocative is, and also about the different platforms. So like on Instagram, right, you have to like deliberately, I guess not 100%, but you typically are like deliberately following accounts. You're choosing which accounts to follow. On TikTok, you can do that as well, but it's more of like daddy algorithm is feeding you what they think they want you to see. So you can, like, if you start to interact with a lot of like provocative accounts on TikTok, it'll just feed you that. Instagram, you have to kind of like seek them out yourself. So there's that difference. I feel like TikTok can sometimes like reveal to you who you really are.
No, interesting.
While Instagram is more curated.
Yeah, because you're kind of like the TikTok thing.
Right, yeah, that's where I got started.
Well, in that space, you know, even though I'm on TikTok, it's just not where a lot of my focus has been. But yes, it would seem that it does reveal who you are. And whereas Instagram, you have more control over what it is that you see and what you don't see.
Yeah, Instagram is changing that a bit. They're a little bit more like TikTok, where they're like suggesting a lot of reels or videos or pictures or whatever. It's tricky because I want, well, first of all, I want whoever, like if we were talking to the woman here, to the girlfriend typically, I wanted like 100% validate their emotional experience and also acknowledge that like maybe it's connected to some sort of, or it's most likely connected to some sort of insecurity, and that insecurity has been given to them by our culture, by society, by TV, by Hollywood, by their peers, by consumerism, fashion, right? So there's all these messages that women and men, but we're talking about women. So there's all these messages that women are getting like throughout their entire lifetimes that they need to look hotter, they need to look sexier, they need to be really seductive, and their value is based on how they look and all this stuff.
Oh, yes, I am aware.
And I don't think that the guys, I don't think that the boyfriends in these situations really think about that much at all. Like they don't take that into consideration. They can like quickly label their girlfriends being really overly sensitive, trying to like control their social media, trying to make them feel guilty or stop them from doing something that's like not even that big of a fucking deal. A lot of times the guys defend themselves. The boyfriends are being like, what's that? Like, who cares? This is just a photo. I'm just liking it. There's no, what's the issue here? So it's really easy to minimize the girlfriend's feelings and experience because it's sort of like, and inside the girlfriend, like they are most likely feeling like they're being like too much or too sensitive. So there's already this like narrative that's been created by society and everything that like you shouldn't feel jealous. And that if you are jealous or feeling insecure, then you're weak, you're unattractive, there's something wrong with you. So it's all stacked up against them. You know what I mean? That's what's going on like at the base level that I don't think is talked about as much.
I agree. And one thing that I want to add to that before you go on, because this is so invaluable, I also think it's like, where do we draw the line between, oh, it's no big deal versus what I am witnessing in this person is actually low character and something that is not actually in alignment with my values. So I think that's a really hard line to draw.
This episode is sponsored by Lomi. Now that I finally invested in a Lomi, it has changed the way I deal with my food waste. Lomi is the biggest innovation in the modern day kitchen since the dishwasher. It is a smart and simple solution to turn food scraps into plant food, which is amazing. It's like turning garbage to gold. Seriously, in just 4 hours, Lomi transforms almost anything you eat into nutrient-rich plant food at the push of a button. So first of all, it helps cut the chore of taking out the trash in half. It eliminates bugs and odors in your kitchen. And here's a bonus. You get to feed your lawn or garden or whatever it is that you have with all natural fertilizer that you just created out of your food scraps. It's really genius. Now, Lomi has a new app that lets me track my environmental impact, earn points for every cycle, and redeem for freebies from Lomi and other great brands. It's so genius. And it really just has helped me turn my home into a climate solution. And like I said, now I can transform my organic waste into nutrient-rich Lomi earth that I can feed to my plants, lawn, or garden, because I am starting to have plants and all of that, and I love it, instead of sending it to a landfill. Also, Lomi promises to bring you the best possible experience every time you run a cycle. They are one of the only kitchen appliances that has a full, no questions asked, lifetime warranty on all devices. And they don't stop there. Lomi looks after you from day one and beyond. When you purchase a continued subscription, you'll automatically get upgraded to a new Lomi device every 3 years. It's really just wonderful. Whether you want to start making a positive environmental impact or just grow a beautiful garden, Lomi is perfect for you. Head to lomi.com/onlove and use the promo code onlove to get $50 off your Lomi. That's $50 off when you head to Lomi, lomi.com/onlove and use promo code onlove at checkout. Thank you, Lomi, for sponsoring this episode.
I think another thing is that a lot of the women who've come to me about this, what I have had to point out to them is, in what way are you complicit in this entire machine? In other words, in what way are you posting on social media things that you know are going to give you validation because of how you look? Or when you go out with your girlfriends without your man, like, how are you behaving? And I think that this is just the larger context of, like, where do we draw the line between, like, what is actually okay and what is not okay within the realm of a relationship? But please continue. But I wanted to add that.
I mean, that's really complicated, right?
It is.
Yeah. Women are going to be complicit in some sort of way. And they've been told that, like, if you're going to be maybe of value or interesting, or if someone, like, should pay attention to you, then you should dress in a sexy sort of provocative, attractive sort of way. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, then they're devalued. So it's like, do you play the game at all? Do you not? Like, if you are complicit, does that mean that you then can't have a reaction to your boyfriend following these, like, hot models or whatever on Instagram? Does that make it so that, like, you're canceling out yourself? And so, like, this is, I feel like this should be like a podcast series, because there's, like,
really
so many.
There's so many layers. Well, let's choose a layer and go for it. Here's something that I would share. I've just been lucky that the men who I've been with, like, they're just, like, not into that, right? On social media. They're just not very present on social media anyway. I mean, who knows what they're doing? I mean, whatever. But I don't really think. But if I were to meet a guy and a man, I should say, I don't really date guys anymore. But if I were to meet a man and I noticed that he was following accounts in my eyes that were clearly provocative, meaning the only purpose of that woman's account is to show herself. Basically, it's like soft porn. Mm-hmm. It's to show herself basically as naked as she possibly can. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's almost like, I don't see that there's much of a difference between that and going to a strip bar. Mm-hmm. And so if I were to see that he was following those, like, this, not someone who's, like, actually is contributing to the world, but also, like, once in a while shows, like, a cute little, like, mini skirt shot or whatever. But, like, really, like, I would be so turned off. I would just be incredibly turned off. But how do we have the conversation about it?
That's funny, because whenever I post about this, a lot of women in the comments say exactly that. That if they're dating somebody and that guy is following a bunch of those accounts and it just gives them, like, the major ick, it's really hard for them to kind of, like, rebound after that, seeing them in, like, a more positive light. Like, it feels like such a red flag. And it also might be, like, I don't talk about, like, evolutionary psychology that much, but this could maybe be tapping into that, right? Like, evolutionarily, like, women had to be, like, looking really sexy in order to, like, attract the man to reproduce, yada, yada. And if they see that, like, a man is going to be, like, distracted by a lot of other, like, hot chicks out there, then they're going to be, like, instantly turned off. Like, that doesn't feel safe. They're not, this man isn't going to stay with me. This doesn't feel secure. They could, like, leave me. So, like, that probably is connected to some sort of evolutionary psychology thing and modern
I think
dating.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So it feels unsafe. It feels unsafe. It also feels disrespectful. It reflects the man's values, right?
It does.
And so you get kind of, like, a good idea of who this person is, or at least, like, sort of, like, a part of who they are. So usually my take on this is for the girlfriend to talk to the boyfriend and let them know that when you like these pictures and these accounts and you follow them, it makes me feel whatever. It makes me feel X. It makes me feel bad about myself. It makes me feel insecure. It makes me feel like I don't look like these women. So it makes me feel like you're not actually attracted to me. So you just talk about like the emotional experience that you're having. And then I would also suggest like asking first, like before you ask them to maybe like stop following them or stop liking these photos, ask them like, do you understand where I'm coming from? Do you get my emotional experience? Can you sort of like empathize with how I'm feeling? They can like try to get into your shoes and understand what your experience is, and then go ahead and make the request for them to stop following them. That's up to you if you want to make that request or if you just want to like let them know what your emotional experience is, and then hopefully they make a decision that is in alignment with the relationship. And if they don't, then that's even more information for you.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I don't know. Like, I think a green flag would be if you don't even have to ask them to unfollow and they were just like, no problem, whatever makes you feel more comfortable. Right. Like, you're right. Like, it is sort of like a low vibe for me. You know, it's kind of low vibrations that I looked for, like when I'm bored or lonely and I am going to unfollow. Mm-hmm. And I think that's great. Yeah, I think it's a very difficult thing. I also think that, you know, we have to really acknowledge the fact that these accounts do provide a temptation that is very similar to pornography, that is very similar to a strip joint. And I think that men need to ask themselves, like, is this who I want to be? Is this actually part of my value system? Do I want this kind of temptation? I remember speaking to a male friend of mine and him being like, he was very disciplined and he was just like, I don't look at porn. I don't look at any of these things because I understand the fragility of just the human mind. And I understand like how it can, as a man, it could easily in a weak moment, I could go there and then where's the return back? And so he just doesn't do it. And I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. We also, like, I'm not here to, like, defend that guy, but I want to, like, understand the context of where they're coming from. So, like, they might have been boys that have been raised in this sort of, like, pornography culture where porn and all these sorts of photos were, like, really easily accessible. And there is maybe, like, a developmental age when you're a kid, a teenager, where your, like, brain is just, like, looking for this stuff. Your hormones are raging. You're so fucking horny. You can't not look for it all over the place.
Yeah, and that's part of life, right? It's part of, like,
and it's part of it. Yeah. Developmentally appropriate, right? And that's hopefully when like other people will start like talking to that kid being like, yeah, this is super appealing and I get why you're feeling this and why you're attracted to these photos, and let's talk about what it's doing to you and how it's like helping to shape how you view women, and do you want to view them, like, does it match your value? Like, you can have this conversation with a 14-year-old. It would be maybe really uncomfortable for them, but it's important. But how many of these 14-year-olds, 13-year-olds are having that conversation? 2%, 5% of them, right? Exactly. So there's this sort of like arrested development in like the adolescent stage of brain development where these men are still, and the social media, like the women, the social media, the tech bros who are creating all these apps, they know that these get views. They know that this sells ads. So like the social media and technology has not allowed these boys who never got that talk to grow up and grow out of this shit. Mm-hmm. And now this conversation that they should have got from like a caring parent or something is now on you, the girlfriend, to have this conversation with a 30-year-old, 40-year-old, 50-year-old. And it's so embedded. And the neural pathways are so thick in their brains that they're going to be defensive. They're going to feel ashamed, but not even be able to get in touch with that shame.
Yeah.
It's very difficult. So like, yes, I want you to be like, this is how I feel. And then I want that guy to reflect on what's important to him and to stop fucking following these accounts without you asking him.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen most of the time. I think you do need to ask that guy. And you most likely will need to have multiple conversations, which is like, I understand, icky, red flags all over the place. And it's not your responsibility, but it's sort of the situation.
Well, I appreciate you adding for the audience the sort of male psychology behind that, because I think that's important and something that you're, as a man, more qualified to talk about. What I would just say is, I do think if you are in your 30s, 40s, and 50s, and he's following not one, but several, I do think that's a red flag. I think that you can consider that as a red flag if, this is important, if you conduct your life in such a way that you have a strong value system. So you can't allow your jealousy, regardless of where it comes from, when I am, as a woman, I am very well of the conditioning. You cannot allow your jealousy to run the show if you yourself are not living your life in according to your values. In other words, if, like I said, if you're out with your girlfriends and you're flirting with a bunch of dudes for validation while your guy is at home, and yet you're telling him you don't want him to follow a bunch of provocative accounts, I think there's a hypocrisy there. So I want to empower women to say exactly what Jeff said, like, this is how I feel. I feel uncomfortable about it. And I think that adding the value thing, like, I'm the kind of person who really values A, B, C, and D, and this is like the kind of relationship I want to build. I don't want that in my life. And you're either on board or you're not. And just so you know, I'm not going to post a bunch of pictures of myself in a bikini. And when I'm out, I will never be out without you and speaking to a man in a way that I would not speak to if you were not, if you were right there, right in front of me. Like, so I think that speaking to like what you are also committed to is important. And that kind of firmness and certainty in your delivery, I think, is either going to scare the shit out of the wrong guy and he's going to run, or it's going to maybe the quote unquote better right guy or the right guy for you right then and there is going to at least say, you know what? Fine. All good.
This episode is sponsored by Oak Essentials. I am pretty excited to share with you about a really great skincare brand, Oak Essentials. Oak Essentials line is full of luxurious products that really work, especially if you are trying to achieve that natural, no makeup look, which is something that I really, really love personally. Oak Essentials aims to unlock healthy, glowing skin with decadent and hydrating ingredients that give you a really dewy glow, which I love. So the Oak Essentials approach to aging is to help you look and feel your best, really at any age. So you can buy, by the way, the Moisture Rich Balm on its own or as part of one of Oak's Essentials best-selling bundles for a simple start-to-finish skincare routine. Not to mention, it makes the perfect gift for any skincare lover in your life. They really do use the best ingredients. They use organic coconut, cocoa seed butter, organic coconut oil, sea buckthorn fruit oil. It's just all natural and beautiful. So stop putting toxins on your skin. Seriously, there's so many ways to make your skin look great without putting toxins on it. And start seeing your dream complexion with Oak Essentials. I'm calling it 2024 is the year of the natural head-to-toe glow. My followers will get 15% off their first order when they use code Jillian at checkout. That's 15% off your first order. Oak Essentials, OAKESSENTIALS.com, promo code Jillian. Go ahead and treat yourself from luxurious skincare to meaningful self-care. You deserve it.
Switching gears.
Yeah.
Sort of. Because I think it's kind of related, but it's the reverse. My favorite video of yours, I love all your videos, but one that really I was like, oh my God, this is so good, was your commentary on the Jonah Hill situation. Mm-hmm. And you did a whole creative thing, which I'm assuming you did on TikTok and then shared it on Instagram because it was, yeah. The Jonah Hill thing is an interesting thing because he was using classic therapy speak, basically what is in the current pop, you know, psychology zeitgeist of boundaries and this and that to quote unquote confront his soon to be ex-girlfriend or girlfriend. And I loved that you as a therapist called it out as bullshit and that basically a spiritual bypass. So I'd love to discuss that with you because I think that one of the things that's really great about mental health being at the forefront of social media is that people are becoming a lot more aware of their stuff. They are mm-hmm. being like, wow, maybe that does have to do with my dad or my mom. Like things that like we, at least when I was growing up, like that was not talked about at all. Like when mm-hmm. I was in my teenage years, my 20s, even in my early 30s, like we weren't talking about this. And I was part of a yoga community that was very, very quote unquote self-aware and, you know, all mm-hmm. the mind, body, spirit stuff. But we weren't talking about this. And so I love that these younger generations are, but also they're weaponizing it. Everyone's a narcissist. I'd like to take a moment to really dissect the Jonah Hill thing, honestly, because what people I think need to realize is that the way that he communicated was not a way to communicate, is not relationally intelligent. It was actually relationally mm-hmm. very dumb. Mm-hmm. And so take it away, Jeff.
That video, it's just to give you like a little transparency on like how I made that video, I guess, or my thinking about it. It was a Friday late afternoon at the end of the week. And this Jonah Hill thing just sort of popped off on the internet, and his girlfriend at the time, but now currently ex-girlfriend. I mean, they dated 2 years ago. This was like text messages from when they dated and then mm-hmm. they broke up. This like goes off on like late Friday, and I'm just like, oh, this is a thing. Oh, this is interesting. Oh, this is in alignment with like things that I've said. I'm going to go ahead and make a real quick video. Mm-hmm. And I like made it. I didn't really script it out like I typically do script it out. I just like threw it up on the internet, and then I left for the night because I was going out to dinner and I was going to go meet up with some friends. And then later that night, I was like, oh shit, it went viral. Mm-hmm. And that's when I was like, oh, I wish I would have been like slightly more thoughtful about it. The thing that, and I want to get into it, but one of the things that hit me that had never like hit me before was like, I stand behind what I say, and we'll talk about what I said, but I also felt like all of a sudden I took this private conversation, what Jonah Hill thought was a private conversation between him and his girlfriend
and
2 years ago.
And exploited it.
And exploited it. And I was also like, before this, I was also a Jonah Hill fan. Like, I like his acting. I like his comedy.
Me too.
Right. It wasn't until all this came out and then he's very talented. And then other people were like, oh, he's actually a dickhead. And here's like other reasons why. And I was like, mm-hmm. okay, maybe
I'm
I don't
sure
have
there's
to
a
be.
Lot of talented people who are.
Yeah, exactly. But there was this weird, icky feeling of like, I just used this private text message. And then it went by. And then like news stations called me. And then Sarah, his ex-girlfriend, contacted me.
No.
Through a DM to Instagram, because she had already been following me. And so I was her like favorite online therapist, as I should be. And then she messaged me. She was like, oh my God, my favorite online therapist, like commented on my thing. I'm so amazed. And then we had this sort of back and forth. And I was like, oh, I'm so weirdly, intimately tied into this.
Yeah, I get that.
That like, it's making me like, would I have posted it in the first place? Probably. But I did not like the attention. And then I went on my own personal journey of I have ex-girlfriends and I have text messages with them. And did I say anything that mm-hmm. could have been like, I'm mm-hmm. a therapist that talks about therapy speak all the time and all the wonderful things about it. I must have had moments in my text messages where I said something not okay. So then I was thinking of like, are there ex-girlfriends that might be still mad at me? And then I sort of didn't respond to anybody for 3 days that was like content. And I like passed up all these media opportunities because I felt like deeply uncomfortable about it. And then I started getting death threats.
Oh God, really?
Yeah. So then there was like, because it went so viral and because that went on for like a week or something, there was a bunch of men who are defending Jonah Hill and being like, Jonah Hill and all the rest of the men should tell their girlfriends not to post bikini pictures of themselves, even if they are surfers and this is what they do as a profession. This is not okay. And you're coming out against Jonah Hill, and I hope you fall out of a window. I hope that you die from cancer. I hope
okay,
that
that's like, awful. That's awful.
Right.
But I think it's interesting and pertinent to this conversation because we're seeing the other perspective, men and how they feel about women doing it. But yeah, mm-hmm. that's so interesting. So you questioned your integrity.
I questioned my integrity. I didn't feel that great about it. I actually, so like 2 months ago, I got a letter from the Oregon Board of Licensed Professional Counselors, and they said, somebody has filed an official complaint against you as a therapist. And I've been a therapist for like 20 years. Nobody's ever filed a complaint against me. And I was like, oh God, what is this?
Have you been a therapist since your early 20s?
Since I was, 23.
Oh my God. I can't imagine going to a 23-year-old therapist. I wouldn't have listened to you, but that's impressive.
But you wouldn't have. Anyway. And that's why I only counseled 12-year-olds when I was 23.
Really? Yeah. Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah, that makes sense. That's smart. Very smart.
And there was an official complaint made because of this video that I made about Jonah Hill. And the complaint was that it was a stupid complaint that was quickly thrown out. But the complaint was like, I was using my quote unquote celebrity to diagnose a public figure, and licensed therapists are not allowed to diagnose anybody except for their private clients. Diagnosing him. I was just saying that he was using the word boundaries incorrectly.
Yes.
So this thing has like followed me in these really weird ways.
Oh God, and here
ways.
I am following you with it even more.
Oh, no. Yeah. I like that we're like transparently talking about it.
Yeah.
I just think that the backstory, the sort of like journey that I went on is interesting.
I think it's very interesting.
Yeah, and I'm not avoiding answering the question because
No, I think this is very interesting. Let me tell you why I loved it. Well, first of all, my assumption was that this was already very much in the news and that you were commenting on something that many other people were commenting on. So I had no idea that you felt like, okay, like I did this, the cat's out of the bag. I thought the cat was way out of the bag and you were commenting on something that was already very much in the media.
To me, it was already very much in the media, but my video took it to some other level. And then I was like, whoa, I'm not prepared for this.
Yeah, I get that. I get that.
But I stand by my message. So
let's talk about the message.
Yeah. And also, like, the thing that made this even more of a letdown was that Jonah Hill, just months ago, before this, I think, came out with that documentary on Netflix.
Yes, I'm aware, with his therapist. Yes.
With his therapist. That was actually, there's good things and bad things about that documentary.
It doesn't matter.
But he was like, I'm such a proponent of therapy. And look at me. I'm like, or at least trying to be, a very evolved man that understands how their past affects their present and how they show up in relationships, all this stuff. And so we're like, yay.
But this is my beef with therapy.
Okay, let's see. Let's hear it.
And that is, I think it's important to learn in your therapy office or coach office, whatever, how to actually be a high-functioning person and not just talk about your childhood all day long and how it impacted you. One of the things that I think that most people are missing, myself included, I can improve on this too. Like I think that's a very small percentage of people on this planet who are truly gifted in their social skills. And I think that what's important and what was so important about what you pointed out is that having that level of awareness and being able to say these words like boundaries and whatnot, in many ways is meaningless if you don't know how to actually communicate in a way that isn't grandiose. And the problem with Jonah Hill's comment or whatever, and let's even shelve Jonah Hill, the problem with a lot of people's comments when they start to talk to someone else, like they all of a sudden, you can tell that they've been therapized. And that's the person that how I think really is problematic. Someone who is so therapized and they can say those words like boundaries and this and that, but they are totally missing the mark in how to connect with the other person in a way that isn't coming from a place of grandiosity or even coming from a place of low self-esteem, but really communicating something. To me, there was only weakness in his message. And the weakness was, I feel so insecure that I'm going to tell you exactly, you know, this is my work in therapy and I'm going to prove it to you, as opposed to, in all fairness to Jonah Hill and anyone else who might be defending him, we don't know the backstory. We don't know how many conversations they've had. So just to point out to the audience, we are literally, this isn't anything personal against him. We're using Jonah Hill and the video that Jeff made of him and his ex-girlfriend as literally just an example, which is that is not how you communicate with someone if you want it to go well.
Right. Yeah, 100%. And he was, like you're saying, he's using therapy speak, and boundaries is a term, like, is therapy speak. And he was using the word boundaries in an incorrect way. And yes. He was using it as like a power move. And so he was saying, it's my boundary for you to, you cannot post pictures of yourself while you're surfing. Also, like, I don't want you to like go surfing with these men who like maybe want to be with you. I don't want you to like spend time with friends that like don't have your best interests in mind when it comes to like you being in a relationship with me. And like you said, he should have just started with like, I feel insecure and that's it. That's mm-hmm. where he should have just ended it. But instead, he was like, this is, so he tried to have like power over her. It's funny because this like therapy speak comes with weight now, because there's been like this shift in culture when it comes to therapy and how it's like not as stigmatized anymore. And before, in the 80s and 90s and even like 2000s, therapy speak was called psychobabble. And you were like,
I remember, that's like, right? Something my mom used all the time.
Uh-huh. Like, uh-huh. Oh, fucking psychobabble. And you're immediately dismissed. And now it's the opposite, that if you like use these therapy terms, you're not dismissed and you better be fucking taken seriously. Right?
Exactly. Exactly.
So I like that there's been a shift, but in cases like Jonah Hill, I don't even think that like his experience of insecurity is not problematic. Like, we're all going to feel insecure. He just needed to like express that emotion or experience differently. Also, this is a complete assumption, but I think it like works for lots of guys like this, that like, I imagine that Jonah Hill and Jonah Hill types are really attracted to these women and all of the like pictures that they're putting on Instagram and they're, you know, looking really hot and sexy and cute. And then they start dating them and then there's a problem.
Oh, so the thing that's a very common thing. Yes.
Right. Now you're trying to control them. The thing that like initially attracted you to them, and you're trying to change them. And it's just like, ugh, that's a part that I really didn't like.
Bingo. I think people do that to each other in general. I think that people are often, I'm so glad you mentioned this. And I think that this is really important, because one of the biggest problems that I see in couples is that they're unconsciously trying to change each other all the time. And the paradox is that, or the irony, I should say, is the very thing that attracts us to someone could become the very thing that we want to change in them.
Right.
Right. So we're drawn to this energy. We're drawn into something. And some would say that we're drawn to something in them that we have repressed inside ourselves. And so if we're in a relationship with them and we don't honor it within ourselves, all of a sudden that thing that we found really attractive and sexy becomes a threat and it starts to make us feel very uncertain. And then we try to change it. And I think this is a fundamental problem in human relationships and dynamics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. And there's some things that maybe could or should change in relationships. Oh, so like if you're attracted to somebody because they're so good at flirting with you and they're such a big flirt, then that makes sense that you're pulled into that flirty energy. And then if you end up in like a relationship, a monogamous committed relationship with them, but they're still being flirty with other people outside of your relationship, you could be like, well, that's who they are. That's what initially attracted. But that behavior probably should change, unless you agreed that like flirtation is an okay thing in relationship, whatever. In this case, like, Jonah Hill is attracted maybe to like Sarah being a professional surfer, and he started to learn how to surf as well. It would be very unfair for him to be like, I don't want you to surf, or this is how you're gonna surf, or these are the types of clothes you're gonna wear while you're surfing. Yeah, it's just like, you knew what you were getting
into. You were getting into. I think that's an important message for everyone. Like, if you know what you're getting into and you're choosing that, you cannot attempt to change or control the person once you're in a relationship with them.
Okay, now I want to talk to you about EveryPlate. In 2024, EveryPlate is a company that you can really count on to make mealtime easier without compromising on quality. This is something that's incredibly important to me. EveryPlate recipes include only the highest quality ingredients, including sustainably sourced seafood that meets the Monterey Bay Aquarium seafood rankings. So you know your meals will be fresh, flavorful, and responsible. I have made the sustainable choice this January, Every plate offsets 100% of their delivery emissions, and their meals have a 31% lower carbon footprint, on average, than supermarket meals of the same portion. Plus, nearly all packaging materials are curbside recyclable in most areas in the U.S., which is fantastic. So stop stressing over what's for dinner, because I know I do. Every plate provides plenty of delicious variety with more than 25 tasty and affordable recipes that change every week. So it's easy to find something flavorful and satisfying for every meal of the day. You know, you can have breakfast 24/7, 15-minute or less meals, you know, feel-good food, and even more delicious options to your order with over 25 convenient sides, breakfast items, lunches, snacks, desserts, and more. I've just been really enjoying it. So get a meal for $1.49 plus $1 steaks for life by going to everyplate.com/podcast and entering code 49Jillian. Subscription must be active to qualify and redeem the $1 steak. Get started with Every Plate for just $1.49 per meal plus dollar steaks for life by going to everyplate.com/podcast and entering code 49Jillian. Subscription must be active to qualify and redeem a dollar steak.
You wrote a book, Big Dating Energy. What inspired you to write about dating?
That wasn't my first idea.
Okay.
Because you most likely experience this as well. Like, you start making content and then eventually you get big enough, and then like literary agents are like crawling all over you. And yeah, eventually maybe you talk to some and then you find one that you like. And that's what I did. And my literary agent, Adriana, was like, what do you want to write about? And I was like, I want to write like a self-help memoir. I want to talk about like all the things that I went through as a kid into an adult and be a good storyteller and have these sort of like lessons that I learned that maybe you will resonate with. And Adriana was like, great, this is fantastic. And then I sat down to try to outline that book and I was like, write a fucking memoir. Writing a memoir is incredibly difficult. Like, yes. What? A huge, yeah. So,
and difficult to sell.
Difficult to sell. And there's also like, I'm all about emotional work and I'm in therapy. I've gone to therapy for most of my life. But there's almost kind of like, there's a new sort of different type of emotional work you have to do when you write a memoir. There are so many things that you have to confront about yourself and so much anger that you have to work through. And if you write a memoir and you're the narrator and you're just like an angry fucking asshole that you think is really justified, it's not going to resonate.
It's not going to work. You really have to have processed that. We've talked about this offline a little bit, but I'm in the process of writing my book. And it's not a memoir, though I do add some personal anecdotes from my marriage. And it's interesting because this was something that I've been planning to write for a while, but I really feel ready to write it now because when I talk about some painful moments in my marriage, I really don't have any emotional connection to it anymore. And to your point, you kind of have to not have that, but it forces you to go back there because I did write one anecdote between me and I was in one abusive relationship in my life in my 20s. Mm-hmm. And I don't think about it anymore. But when I was writing it, I started to get really angry. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow, this is so interesting. Like, I'm having to like go back into, and I start to remember things that I have not thought about in years. Mm-hmm. I was like, holy shit. So yeah. I understand that. So when you were confronted to that, you were like, no, I'm not doing
that. Yeah. And like we talked about a little bit on my podcast episode with you, there's like, you also have to have empathy for your family members or for my mom or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, not quite there.
Right. You're yet. Not there yet. Yeah.
So this is not the book. So I was like, all right, I'm scratching that. And then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to give the people what they want. They follow me for like dating and relationship advice. I'm going to go ahead and do that. And the first part of the book is like focused on like, this is who you can blame for all of your relationship problems, which I love to blame everybody except for myself. And then like sort of like wrap up that first part with like, but like, even though it's fun to blame everybody, you're the one that's responsible for all your shit sort of thing. So how do we take ownership of that and like go a little bit? And then it goes into like all the different stages of dating, the first getting out there, getting on the apps or not getting on the apps, what you put on your profile, the talking stage, first dates, honeymoon, what happens when you get past the honeymoon stage.
Then this is great.
Sex problems, conflict problems, how to have like a good, strong, long-term relationship, how to end the relationship, break up with someone ethically, and then how to like stay single for a bit or dive back in. So it's like a self-help relationship dating advice book. And I am very funny.
Yeah,
I'm trying to be very funny the whole time. And I'm also writing it with my ex-wife. So I was married for 7 years and my ex-wife was always my writing partner. So we wrote it together and it's written in my voice, but she comes in every now and then to check me or to like make fun of me.
I think that's great.
It works.
I think that's really great that you wrote it with your ex. First of all, that's such a meaningful story in and of itself. Mm-hmm. First, I want to ask you, like, what do you think of the current dating landscape? Do you think it's actually much different than it was 5-10 years ago? Like, what has changed? What has made things very difficult? Do you believe in the apps? Do you think people should be meeting others more organically? What are your thoughts?
I mean, I think the apps have really taken over compared to 5-10 years ago, and especially 20 or so years ago when I started dating. 30 years ago? I don't know. I was dating in the 90s. I feel like when the apps first came out, they were like this fun novel, like this is how you're going to find out who is in your area. And there wasn't like algorithms like there are on apps now. And I think these like algorithms have totally fucked it up. And I think that like the tech bros or Silicon Valley or all the investors in the dating apps have like fucked up what used to be kind of like a cute, new, novel, modern way to meet people. Now there's like, I don't know if you've seen this. There's been videos on TikTok about this, but this has been happening a while on Hinge, where like if you want to send somebody a rose on Hinge, you get one free rose a week and you can like pay for more roses. And a rose is like a super like I really like you and I'm at the top of your pile and you have to see my profile. And if you want to talk to people that would be like a really good match that like Hinge or the algorithm says would be like a really good fit for you, they lock them in what they call rose jail. Those people are not accessible unless you pay a rose in order to see their profile and send them a message. Hinge and all the other apps are doing this. Like they know now who would be a good match for you and they're making you pay for it. And so now we're seeing like some of the younger, like I feel like millennials are just like, whatever, dating apps are necessary evil and this is what we have to do. When the Gen Zers are like, do we have to do this though? Like, can't we maybe like meet IRL, or they're actually like meeting through not dating apps like Fortnite or something. Like they're just like meeting through their avatars in slightly different ways, or like sliding into DMs a little more often. So I've been seeing that there's like more of a pushback rebellion against the dating apps. I've been seeing that the dating apps are a little worried that they're not getting the younger Gen Zers to sign up anymore. So there's like a little bit of panic, and it's going to be interesting to see what the next move is. The only app that I don't think has an algorithm is Bumble.
Oh, interesting.
Bumble's just like, here's everyone in your area. This is chaotic. Good luck. Like, which is sort of like ridiculous, like all the people that you can get matched with, but it's better because if you spend enough time, you can actually like see all the people in your area instead of them being locked behind some sort of paywall. You know what I mean?
A couple of my clients had success expanding the terrain. So in other words, like it's not just about who lives like right near me, but I'm willing to like meet someone who lives maybe like an hour away from me. And they met like the people who they're going to marry actually.
That's the thing, is that like the things that dating apps can filter for are not important when it comes down to it. Like you can filter for distance, which is something, but it like you would drive an extra 15 minutes for the love of your life. You can filter for height, which is like a little, who fucking cares?
Yeah,
like,
seriously.
You're not even going to think about that if you're meeting someone in real life at a bar. Yeah. Like really, all the stuff that can be filtered for, most of the stuff that can be filtered for is actually not that important. And I think that people are catching on. And I think that apps are trying to respond to that in a way of like, this is how we can like match you based on whatever values or interests or hobby or something like deeper, real chemistry, but they haven't figured that out. And I'm not sure they ever will figure it out. So I like to see them flailing.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Three biggest mistakes people make on the apps and/or just in dating.
I feel like we need to maybe talk more about like the cost of admission. Like there's always going to be something that you don't like about a person. For me, it's like, if you're going to date me, I have like a really poor memory. I'm very absent-minded. And this is the cost of admission. I'm going to forget what we talked about last night. I'm always going to forget my keys. Yes. And I think it's like very endearing and cute. But if you dated me, you'd be like, come the fuck on. Like this is.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Is it selective?
It's very selective. Yeah. And so if I'm talking to a client, I am hyper focused on them. I'm taking notes.
Yeah.
I have this like very specific relationship with them and I'm mm-hmm. remembering everything. But if it's anybody else, I'm just like, I don't even know. Where am I? I don't even know. Like, I think that some people experience certain costs of admission to people and they're just like, forget it. I'm going to get back on the apps because there's an endless supply of people that I can meet. So I don't think that people are sticking it out as much as they should. And I think you've talked about this, like put everything on the table and then end the relationship.
Yes.
So that's one thing. I mean, this has been said to death, so I won't spend too long on it. And I think this is changing as well. But the spark is probably like overvalued. There's like a difference between like green flag chemistry and red flag chemistry.
Let's talk about that. I think people need to know the difference between green flag chemistry and red flag chemistry. Let's go there.
I mean, so red flag chemistry is so fun, but it's chaotic. It's unpredictable. I have no idea what's going to happen. There's like so much intermittent reinforcement where like sporadically you're being given these dopamine hits. There's like love bombing. You're not going to see them for 5 days and all of a sudden you're gonna. There's like really hot sex maybe because like, and the sex is hotter because like, you're just like, when are we going to do this again? So there's just like so much unpredictability that can create like this chemistry. And that's more red flag chemistry in my opinion. Green flag chemistry is still really sweet and wonderful and ooey and gooey. Not as exciting though sometimes, but green flag chemistry is more like I can show up as my authentic self. I feel really seen. It feels safe enough for me to express my feelings and needs, even if I feel embarrassed or humiliated. We have like similar values, similar hobbies, similar interests. It's more of like birds that flock together, stay together instead of opposites attract sort of thing. So it feels safe.
Yes. But I also think that green flag energy is, I also like how this person smells. I like how, I mean, you need to like each other's smell. You can't have sex with someone if you don't like their smell.
Like you've never had sex with someone where like they're a little stinky and then you eventually enjoy that smell?
No, I've had sex with people who are stinky, but I think their stink is hot. For whatever reason, I'm like, bring it. I love it. But if I am repelled by your smell, we are not having sex. Like that's never going to happen.
Yes.
So I think that smell is a big part of it, pheromones. And I think you need to like the person's touch. I totally agree. My friend, Dr. Scott Lyon, who wrote a book, Addicted to Drama, he talks about the red flag chemistry is the trauma tingles, which I think is very clever. I think that also a lot of the red flag chemistry comes from, there's an immaturity behind it, which is like, oh, I'm just so like, this person is just like the movie character, fill in the blank, that I've had a crush on. I mean, we do this, even if it's unconscious, that I've had a crush on my whole life and they're just like it, this person. And nothing is going to stop me from getting this person.
Yeah. For me, it's the Princess Bride movie where it's the hero, that guy, he was so hot and cool. And, and then like the princess is just like this damsel in distress, like sort of thing.
Yeah, who's that actress? She was married to Sean Penn. So Robin Wright Penn.
Yes.
That was like her first introduction to the world. And she was very beautiful. And I forgot his name. Oh God, he's a British actor, but yes, yeah. He's totally, yeah, I'm the whole thing.
She was my first crush. That was like my first, like, this is what like the relationship dynamic should be when I grow up. And so that was my red flag chemistry.
Right.
Is that like, I was seeking that like very exaggerated sort of relationship. So the chemistry stuff is something that we should think about and pay attention
to.
The last one.
I mean, you already gave us so much, so.
No, I want to give you something else.
Okay. And we'll wrap it up.
Yeah. The last one, I want to like give like some sort of like controversial answer here that I'm like 100% behind it, but I'm not going to like shame anybody for the type of relationship that they want to have. Mm-hmm. However, I think that there is like for the people that want a monogamous relationship, mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot of like toxic monogamy messages that have been passed down through these sorts of movies and Hollywood and society of like, you should get all of your needs met from your person and mm-hmm. nobody else.
But this is new, Jeff. This is new. This is not something that older generations dealt with. The real monogamy was just like, we have family that knows each other. Mm-hmm. We're going to make babies together. You are like, this makes sense. Like we have a certain role in the world. So this new thing that you're, which I think is in line with soulmate, twin flame, is a very current thing mm-hmm. that I agree can be very dangerous in people's expectations.
Right. Yes. So it sets up these expectations, whether it's emotional, spiritual, mental, or mm-hmm. physical. I forget every physical need, every emotional need, all the needs met. From this one person, right? So like, if that is what you want and your partner wants that too, then I love that for you. But ask yourself, where does this idea come from? Does this actually resonate with you? And do you want it? And would you be open to something that isn't like prepackaged thing that has been passed down for generations? Yeah. So just ask yourself.
Mm-hmm. I think that's very valid and important. Jeff, where can people find you?
Oh, they can find me all over the internet. I'm going viral all the time, babe. So you could look for Therapy Jeff at Instagram or TikTok. You can go to therapyjeff.com. You can pre-order my book, Big Dating Energy, comes out in July. Yeah, those are the places. You can send me an email at jeff@therapyjeff.com. I'm always looking for like inspiration for more content.
Wonderful.
Oh, and you can find me on my podcast, Big Dating Energy.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Well, I thank you for your contribution to people's lives, to the work that you do, including mine. And I thank you for coming on the show. And I look forward to a conversation in the future.
Yes, 100%. Thanks for having me.
Okay.
That's it for this week's episode of Jillian on Love. I do hope that you enjoyed it. Please reach out to me at hello@jillianonlove.com. Let me know what you thought of the episode. Let me know if you have any questions. I designed this podcast for you, so I do want to hear from you. You know, you never know whose life you could be changing by just clicking the share button. If there was just one thing that struck you or you think, oh, my friend really needs to hear this, click share, because again, when you share, that's how we change lives and that's how we get more and more people to step up in their lives and break generational trauma and have healthier relationships. So once again, thank you for listening, and until next time.
Jillian on Love is a Q Code production. Executive produced by David Henning and Steve Wilson. Produced by Shin Yin Hu. Editing and music by Will Tendy.
One of the most sought after executive producers in reality television. I am thrilled to announce Reality with the King, where we'll discuss all things reality TV. I have interviewed everyone from NeNe Leakes, Teresa Giudice, and Kenya Moore. Each episode, we will rehash shocking betrayals, honey. Yes! Hilarious shade and all the drama. Reality with the King podcast is available wherever you get your podcast.
Hi, just checking in and seeing if you might want to step away from the noise of the world for just a moment and connect back to you. If so, join me on my podcast, Letting It Settle with Michael Galyan, where we'll explore mindfulness, self-love, and personal growth as I share practical insights and tools to hopefully help inspire you to start to take charge of your mental and emotional well-being. Search for Letting It Settle with Michael Gallion on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening now.